Chapter 3. The Top and the Bottom. The ceiling was that of a cellar, so heavy and low that people stooped when crossing the room, as if the weight of the vaulting rested on their shoulders. The circular booths of dark red leather were built into walls of stone that looked eaten by age and dampness. There were no windows, only patches of blue light shooting from dents in the masonry, the dead blue light proper for use in blackouts. The place was entered by way of narrow steps that led down as if descending deep under the ground. This was the most expensive barroom in New York, and it was built on the roof of a skyscraper. Four men sat at a table. Raised 60 floors above the city, they did not speak loudly as one speaks from a height in the freedom of air and space. They kept their voices low, as befitted a cellar. "Conditions and circumstances, Jim," said Orrin Boyle. "Conditions and circumstances, absolutely beyond human control. We had everything mapped to roll those rails, but unforeseen developments set in, which nobody could have prevented. If you'd only given us a chance, Jim." "Disunity," drawled James Taggart, "seems to be the basic cause of all social problems. My sister has a certain influence with a certain element among our stockholders. Their disruptive tactics cannot always be defeated."
"You said it, Jim. Disunity, that's the trouble. It's my absolute opinion that in our complex industrial society, no business enterprise can succeed without sharing the burden of the problems of other enterprises."
Taggart took a sip of his drink and put it down again.
"I wish they'd fire that bartender," he said.
"For instance, consider Associated Steel. We've got the most modern plant in the country and the best organization. That seems to me to be an indisputable fact because we got the Industrial Efficiency Award of Globe magazine last year, so we can maintain that we've done our best, and nobody can blame us. But we cannot help it if the iron ore situation is a national problem. We could not get the ore, Jim."
Taggart said nothing. He sat with his elbows spread wide on the tabletop. The table was uncomfortably small, and this made it more uncomfortable for his three companions. But they did not seem to question his privilege.
"Nobody can get ore any longer," said Boyle. "Natural exhaustion of the mines, you know, and the wearing out of equipment and shortages of materials and difficulties of transportation and other unavoidable conditions.
The ore industry is crumbling. That's what's killing the mining equipment business," said Paul Larkin.
"It's been proved that every business depends upon every other business," said Orrin Boyle. "So everybody ought to share the burdens of everybody else."
"That is, I think, true," said Wesley Mooch. But nobody ever paid any attention to Wesley Mooch.
"My purpose," said Orrin Boyle, "is the preservation of a free economy. It's generally conceded that free economy is now on trial. Unless it proves its social value and assumes its social responsibilities, the people won't stand for it. If it doesn't develop a public spirit, it's done for. Make no mistake about that."
Orrin Boyle had appeared from nowhere 5 years ago, and had since made the cover of every national news magazine. He had started out with $100,000 of his own and a $200 million loan from the government. Now he headed an enormous concern, which had swallowed many smaller companies. This proved, he liked to say, that individual ability still had a chance to succeed in the world.
"The only justification of private property," said Orrin Boyle, "is public service."
"That, I think, is indubitable," said Wesley Mooch.
Orrin Boyle made a noise, swallowing his liquor. He was a large man with big virile gestures. Everything about his person was loudly full of life, except the small black slits of his eyes.
"Jim," he said, "Reardon Metal seems to be a colossal kind of swindle."
"Uh-huh," said Taggart. "I hear there's not a single expert who's given a favorable report on it."
"No. Not one. We've been improving steel rails for generations and increasing their weight. Now, is it true that these Reardon Metal rails are to be lighter than the cheapest grade of steel?"
"That's right," said Taggart.
"Lighter?
But it's ridiculous, Jim. It's physically impossible. For your heavy-duty, high-speed mainline track?"
"That's right.
But you're just inviting disaster."
"My sister is."
Taggart made the stem of his glass whirl slowly between two fingers. There was a moment of silence. The National Council of Metal Industries, said Orrin Boyle, passed a resolution to appoint a committee to study the question of Reardon metal, inasmuch as its use may be an actual public hazard.
That is, in my opinion, wise, said Wesley Mooch.
When everybody agrees, Taggart's voice suddenly went shrill, when people are unanimous, how does one man dare to dissent? By what right? That's what I want to know. By what right?
Boyle's eyes darted to Taggart's face, but the dim light of the room made it impossible to see faces clearly. He saw only a pale bluish smear.
When we think of the natural resources at a time of critical shortage, Boyle said softly, when we think of the crucial raw materials that are being wasted on an irresponsible private experiment, when we think of the ore...
He did not finish. He glanced at Taggart again, but Taggart seemed to know that Boyle was waiting, and to find the silence enjoyable.
The public has a vital stake in natural resources, Jim, such as iron ore. The public can't remain indifferent to reckless, selfish waste by an antisocial individual. After all, private property is a trusteeship held for the benefit of society as a whole.
Taggart glanced at Boyle and smiled. The smile was pointed. It seemed to say that something in his words was an answer to something in the words of Boyle.
The liquor they serve here is swill. I suppose that's the price we have to pay for not being crowded by all kinds of rabble. But I do wish they'd recognize that they're dealing with experts. Since I hold the purse strings, I expect to get my money's worth, and at my pleasure.
Boyle did not answer. His face had become sullen.
Listen, Jim, he began heavily.
Taggart smiled.
What?
I'm listening.
Jim, you will agree, I'm sure, that there's nothing more destructive than a monopoly.
Yes, said Taggart,
on the one hand.
On the other, there's the blight of unbridled competition.
That's true, that's very true. The proper course is always, in my opinion, in the middle.
So it is, I think, the duty of society to snip the extremes now, isn't it?
Yes, said Taggart,
it is.
Consider the picture in the iron ore business. The national output seems to be falling at an ungodly rate. It threatens the existence of the whole steel industry. Steel mills are shutting down all over the country. There's only one mining company that's lucky enough not to be affected by the general conditions. Its output seems to be plentiful and always available on schedule. But who gets the benefit of it? Nobody except its owner. Would you say that that's fair?
No, said Taggart.
It isn't fair.
Most of us don't own iron mines. How can we compete with a man who's got a corner on God's natural resources? Is it any wonder that he can always deliver steel while we have to struggle and wait and lose our customers and go out of business? Is it in the public interest to let one man destroy an entire industry?
No, said Taggart.
It isn't.
It seems to me that the national policy ought to be aimed at the objective of giving everybody a chance at his fair share of iron ore, with a view toward the preservation of the industry as a whole. Don't you think so?
I think so.
Boyle sighed.
Then he said cautiously, but I guess there aren't many people in Washington capable of understanding a progressive social policy.
Taggart said slowly,
there are. No, not many and not easy to approach, but there are. I might speak to them.
Boyle picked up his drink and swallowed it in one gulp, as if he had heard all he had wanted to hear.
Speaking of progressive policies, Orrin, said Taggart, you might ask yourself whether at a time of transportation shortages, when so many railroads are going bankrupt and large areas are left without rail service, whether it is in the public interest to tolerate wasteful duplication of services and the destructive dog-eat-dog competition of newcomers in territories where established companies have historical priority.
Well now, said Boyle pleasantly,
that seems to be an interesting question to consider. I might discuss it with a few friends in the National Alliance of Railroads.
Friendships, said Taggart, in the tone of an idle abstraction, are more valuable than gold.
Unexpectedly, he turned to Larkin.
Don't you think so, Paul?
Why, yes, said Larkin, astonished.
Yes, of course.
I am counting on yours.
Huh?
I'm counting on your many friendships.